Hello, we are back with Hedvig Inch by Angry Inch, the podcast where we analysed and tore down the walls surrounding the movie masterpiece that is Hedvig and the Angry Inch, chapter by chapter. And now we're back on the road once again, people, to talk about deleted scenes. Ooh, exciting. And for this deleted scene, I am joined by one of my queens of camp. It's none other than Gilda Wabbit.
Hello, hello. How are you today?
Oh, very good. Thank you so much for joining. Because let's just get this out there right away. Yeah, the reason I thought of asking you to come on isn't just because I love you on Camp Wanakiki. It's that I saw your Instagram and you were playing Hedvig. How did that come about? That's amazing.
Actually, I've been working with a production company here in Kentucky called Drag Daddy Productions. And right before the pandemic, actually, before we were all quarantined, my producer and I had gotten the rights to do Hedvig in July of 2019, I think it was.
That seems so long ago now.
I know. We were like really excited. We were all gung-ho about it. And then of course, everything got shut down. And we actually, last year in November or early December, truly time feels so meaningless anymore. but we did our first run of Hedvig last year in the late fall, early winter. And it was wildly well received. Stephen Trask, the composer of the music, came and saw the show because he lives not far from here. And we got an amazing review on Broadway World. And there was a demand for it to be seen again because we only did like a 4-show weekend. That was all we had the rights for, but we sold out every evening. And so my producer was like, hey, do you want to do it again next year? And I was like, hell yes, absolutely.
You can't say no to that.
Right. No. If someone were to look at me right now and be like, hey, do you want to do Hedvig here somewhere far away in the world? I'd be like, I've got my passport. Let's get a visa. Let's go.
You don't even need prep. Let's just do it right now. If it's in a fast food joint, I don't care. Let's do it.
And that's very Hedvig. Like, she would love that. We would have a great time.
Hell yeah. Oh, I love that. So is it something you always wanted to do?
Yes, absolutely. I have been a performer for over a decade, and I've been, almost 2 decades now. And I've been a drag queen for, it'll be 8 years this winter. And I have, even before I was a drag artist, I was like, oh, I really want to like sink my teeth into Hedvig, because Hedvig was sort of like alongside Short Bus and previously to that Rocky Horror, these like queer touchstones for me that were about like gender and sexuality. And I felt really seen and heard. Like I was like a little queer kid growing up in religious Kentucky. Like my family was very religious. We were not particularly wealthy. I went to a school with other kids who were a lot like me. And so I often felt really misunderstood and not seen. Yeah. And then I saw these films. And truly Rocky Horror was like the gateway drug. Like I saw Rocky Horror and I think this is great. And my friends were like, well, if you like Rocky Horror, you're going to love Hedvig. And then I was like, oh my God, I do love Hedvig. Literally. And so when we started working together and he was like, wow, I really like working with you. I want to like put you in some lead roles. What do you want to do? I was like, Hedvig, I need to, like, can we do this? Like you work with drag artists. I am me. Let's do it.
It's the perfect combination, isn't it? It's like everything about you in one role right there.
Oh, it really does feel like that. And the privilege of getting to do the role a second time, like I did it last fall and now I'm doing it again this summer, is that with some time and space, the lessons that Hedvig taught me about myself have sort of like sunk in. And so now I can reapproach the role and I think in an even more grounded and authentic way. And like, that's really exciting.
That's what I love about the character in general, whether it's the stage show, the movie, anything. As time passes and you watch it multiple times or perform it, in your case, you come to new sort of conclusions and it grows with you. Like the character grows and you understand more about her journey and things like that.
Absolutely.
That applies to everybody. I've said this on the show before. It's not, you know, you don't have to be queer necessarily even. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff for straight people in it, like to understand about themselves. Like, it's just about someone's journey of acceptance and understanding and looking inward. Lots of people can learn from that.
Absolutely. There are so many questions about what is romance? What is love? Why do we pursue relationship? And then also, who am I and how do I get to know myself? And should I be pursuing relationship with me before I pursue relationship with others? And what does it mean to be supported, you know, when it comes to the relationship of Yitzhak and Hedvig? And I think that's really fascinating. And it's, and if you're an audience member or a performer who is open to the experience that Hedvig will take you on, you can really, I think, gain a lot from diving into it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And today we are going to dive into a deleted scene, as I say, but it's kind of just more like extended footage than anything. Mostly about Phyllis. Phyllis is an interesting character. I do really like her. We join our crew at the mall, like in the finished movie. And as I said in the actual episode about this scene, but I don't care about repeating myself. It's been a while, people. Bear with me. I am obsessed with Hedvig's outfit. This is one of the greatest looks in the history of humankind.
Mm. So cute. So chic. I love... It's almost like a nod to Clueless or to the Heathers, which feels like strong films about femininity. And I love so often, in the film especially, I think so often you get to see not like on the nose interpretations, but like you get to see what they have decided Hedvig like sees as like cultural touchstones of femininity and the way that she presents herself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a great way of putting it, actually.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I really got the Heathers vibe. I think it is just the tartan. That's what it is, you know.
Yeah. But,
I hadn't thought about the fact that, yeah, it's very strong female characters in that sense that Hedvig might be kind of drawn to them.
Yeah, the Heathers have this sort of, something that I really like about Hedvig is she's not afraid to allow people to see her as the villain. And I think that the Heathers is a film about weaponized femininity and the way that people see women who are strong and assertive as inherently like violent and bitchy. And I think that it's really interesting that Hedvig is like, yeah, I'm going to fold this into the visual presentation of who I am because the world already sees me this way and I have come to terms with that.
Yeah. I've always called the Hedvig character separate from the person, almost like armor. Like I've created this figure to shield me from the world, but also not just shield, like attack the world almost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every time before I go on stage, I have to give myself a pep talk about how I'm a tiger in a cage and I'm letting myself out of it and I'm going to maul the front row with energy to really give that first half of the show enough like grit and anger and armor for it to like pay off in the end.
Yes. Oh, that sounds perfect.
Yeah.
I wish I could come and see it. Come to the UK, damn it.
Listen, I would love to come to the UK. And she's got her passport, so maybe it'll be in the future. Who knows?
Oh, okay. Yes. Watch this space, listeners.
an announcement that's not coming yet.
It's a possibility of an announcement of an announcement.
precisely. I like to keep an open mind.
But to bring us down a little bit, I always found this in the finished movie as well, this sort of section, I feel a little sad looking at them all sitting there. Because these people might all physically be together here, but they're all alone. Hedvig especially, she is alone. She's silent. They might as well not be there.
Right.
Like, I don't even think she sees them. She doesn't see them as friends, really, does she?
No. And I think there's this, I think one of Hedvig's struggles as a human being, not as an artist, because I think clearly when it comes to her music, she's really good at being expressive and telling the story about her life. But I think something that's hard, especially for a person who's been through something similar to what she's been through, it's hard to express your needs and your wants and your desires openly with the people around you because you've already experienced so much heartache when you expressed want. And so here's a moment where Phyllis is sort of forcing her into this situation where she thinks she's going to see Tommy. And so she's not really talking to Phyllis about her feelings about that. And of course, she doesn't actually want to talk to Tommy about her feelings in this moment, because there's danger in that vulnerability. And she also doesn't feel like her band can support her. And part of the reason they can't support her is that she has pushed them away and like abused them and beat them down to sort of lift herself up as she's like worked with them. And I think she's both learned the loneliness and also crafted the loneliness for herself. And it's really heartbreaking to watch, even in this small moment.
Oh, that's a great way of putting it. Crafted the loneliness. Yeah, it's almost like a choice.
Yeah, I think there is safety in loneliness. And I don't think there's joy in loneliness, but I think there is safety in like, well, as long as I'm alone, as long as I push these people away, they can't disappoint and hurt me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that, sadly. I think we've all been through something, not to the extent Hedvig has, but, you know, we've all felt like, you know, I'm just going to push everyone away, leave me to myself, I'll be fine, you know.
Absolutely. It's so hard to seek companionship, you know.
Yeah. But to lift things from there, you know, Phyllis arrives. She's been tied up with the phone company. That's why she's been late. We're about to understand why, which you don't fully get in the finished
absurd. And Andrea Martin is so good at portraying the ridiculousness of this situation.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's almost like a sketch you'd get in, let me think, well, I mean, over there, you know, Saturday Night Live or something like
Absolutely.
That. You could imagine a little skit about someone with this. She has a phone in her tooth.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't even know how to approach this. So, well, first off, let me just say she sows the seeds here for the plan to snap a picture with Tommy, part of their ploy to out him sort of as a fraud, right? And then we see the tooth thing. It's installed in her damn face. Now, this probably seemed ridiculous, like, enough at the time. But these days, in some ways, it's not that far-fetched, is it? You know, Google Glass is one step closer to this.
Right. Well, and I think what's really interesting about John Cameron Mitchell is that I feel like they're always a little bit too cutting edge, which is maybe why this deleted scene was deleted. Because the idea of transhumanism, of using technology for us to like transcend the like mundanity of our own lives, was really cutting edge when Hedwig the film came out, and it has like slowly become so mainstream that we don't even consider it weird. We're just like, oh yeah, like it's so mainstream that like there is a broad conversation in America right now about how the COVID-19 vaccines are implanting chips in us, like microchips. Yeah. like that's like, I wouldn't call it a well-respected or well-thought-out conspiracy theory, but it is one that has gained plenty of media attention.
Yeah, I've heard it here as well. Yeah. It's spread, you know. Yeah, it's an interesting development, let's say.
Certainly. And like much, much more upsetting than the idea of having a cell phone in my tooth.
Yeah, now I'm trying to think, like, back when this was made, what was the closest thing? I suppose that was around the time, did you even have Bluetooth, like, headset things yet? Maybe around this time? I don't know.
Yeah, I think Bluetooth headsets were starting to become not accessible by, like, a large swath of the population, but certainly things that people talked about. And I think this sort of idea of Phyllis with the cell phone in her tooth speaks a lot to the character of Phyllis and how Hedvig sees her as like this person who is really not good at her job, but is very into the aesthetic and the culture of being like a music agent.
Oh, 100%.
And so she's like playing at being a music agent. She's like, oh, like, I'm not good at my job, but like, if I have a cell phone in my tooth, won't I seem important?
I totally get it. You know, fake it till you make it. She's trying. She's trying to look. She's got a lovely suit on. She acts very authoritative.
Yeah.
She's got this fancy phone, you know, so she's trying to project an image. And for me, it's working, but I don't think it works to the people she's trying to sort of get in with.
Yeah, it feels really it feels shallow. Like, yes, I have the image, but do I have the skills to like back this image up? And I think that's sort of where the rub is, you know, is she's like, I'm doing the thing, right? Like, I'm dressed well. I'm Andrea Martin. I'm saying things. Don't you know who I am? And you're like, no, we don't know who you are because you don't have the skills to back up what you're talking about.
Well, that's what actually makes me think then. Like when you hear her talking here on the tooth phone and she's talking all kinds of nonsense. We don't even really understand what's going on. But there's some kind of music deal she's talking about because she mentions Geffen, who are the record label. Now I'm thinking after what you've said, is she even on the phone to anybody or is this fake too?
Listen, that's a really good possibility. And also, I think she totally could be on the phone with somebody because there is something about Phyllis Stein to me is like a fly. And there's something about the tenacity of a fly that won't go away and you keep swatting it, but you don't actually get it to stop coming your direction. And like when you have that tenacity, you'll be like, fine, like, screw it. Like, sure, secretary, put her through. I'll talk to her for a second. Maybe she'll get off my back for like a month.
That could be it. Yeah, like, okay, put her through. It's fine. It'll just shut her up for a while. They have no intention of actually dealing with her, maybe.
Right, right. Yeah, because I at least as a performer, I have experienced the struggle of finding the balance of like, being tenacious and going after something that I want and also hearing the no implicitly and being like, okay, I'm going to back off. And like, I think sometimes hearing that implicit no can be really hard. And like, also Phyllis is like a comedic character. And so I think she's this exaggeration of the idea of like not having the skills to get you where you want. So you're relying on your like tenaciousness and your go get 'em and your drive and your personality to do it. Yeah.
And it's like, it's not necessarily a bad trait for a manager of a rock band to have. Because the rock band themselves pestering people, that's going to create a bad image. But the manager, it's a little bit removed. It's like
absolutely.
One step. Yeah, you know, like one of my favorite bands, I love the Sex Pistols. And they famously had a manager who was like this almost. He was irritating. He annoyed people. He just talked crap and sounded like an idiot. But it got them places, you know.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've worked with so many performers. This is maybe cruel, but I've worked with so many performers who I find insufferable and annoying and maybe not very good at their jobs. But because of their insufferable nature, they get what they want. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe I should take a lesson from you.
But you know what? You're better than that. You don't need that.
Oh, thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere.
But she says, it's an old friend from CBGB's. He wants to say hello. Now, I'm also thinking, like, is it an act from CBGB's? Is it the owner of CBGB's?
Is it some bartender who works there?
That's more likely, I think. Is it just the guy who cleaned the bathroom? Like, who is it from CBGB? Actually, nobody cleaned the bathroom at CBGB's.
Literally. Oh, of course. I feel like that happens a lot. Is like, there's always like, oh, I've got an in somewhere. And it turns out to be like an intern or a security guard or the door guy. And you're like, this is not actually helpful.
It's always the door guy. Always.
Oh, yeah, because everyone knows the door guy. And the door guy also, it's the door guy's job to be friendly. So you tip him and let it, and you get in the door. And so so he's not actually your friend.
Yeah, I couldn't see it being like a big guy. It's not like Debbie Harry, you know, who performed at CBGB's.
Can you imagine? Yes.
Then again, I could see Debbie Harry in real life liking Hedwig as a movie or something. So that would have been fun.
Well, and you never know when it comes to rock stars. If Phyllis has a nice selection of illicit drugs to give out, she might actually make friends with people who are more famous than her.
That's true. We don't know what's in that handbag she's holding. It's a
absolutely
big bag.
True. Yeah. Oh, and knowing Hedwig, at least my interpretation is the amount of drugs that she is comfortable doing to get herself up out of bed and to put herself back down into bed is deliciously great.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I can totally see that. Like, almost she doesn't necessarily take them for fun. Yeah.
It's like the function.
I've got to do this to get through the day.
Yeah, because I can imagine in this scene, Hedvig being like, okay, I have to go see Tommy. We're gonna get this picture. Like, I look cute, but I'm really stressed out. Let me take a Percocet. Let me take an Ativan. Let me just like do something that I didn't get through a prescription because trans healthcare is incompetent. And I'm just like, gonna go.
I can totally see that. And Phyllis seems like somebody who might have the hookup, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay. I like it. And when she asks Hedvig, you know, to say hello and stuff, I love this bit where Hedvig speaks into her teeth, which is the most comical thing I've ever seen. And she's like, hello?
Absolutely. And I think the film is really well edited and put together on like a nice timeline where it expands the lore of the theater show. But occasionally I'm like sad that scenes like this didn't make it in, because the sort of like absurdity and humor of it all is like a part of life. Like Hedvig has all of these tragic ups and downs that we see. And also there's like so much more delicious humor you can like wring out of this experience. And this scene is absolutely an example of that.
I can see why they cut the whole thing with the tooth fairy, because it comes back in another deleted scene that I'm going to be doing, spoiler alert people, as the next episode, it comes back again. I can see why, because maybe they thought, oh, it's a bit too outlandish, a bit too silly. But it works for me, but I'm an obsessive. So, you know,
absolutely.
The more Hedvig, the better for me.
Just give it to me. Where's the 4-hour John Cameron Mitchell director's cut? Like, we need it.
Yeah, release the John Cameron Mitchell cut. Get that hashtag going on Twitter, everybody. Let's get it trending.
Right, absolutely. Let's do it.
And to hang up, this is another thing that just, I was wetting myself laughing. To hang up, she has to tap a tooth with her tongue. Which is just amazing. Oh my God.
Absolutely. You're the first person who showed me the scene, which like brought me a lot of joy. And I'm in Hedvig rehearsals right now. And I really want to find a moment to like tap my tongue for nobody, just for me. Just for me, because I don't think anyone in the audience will know, but I just think I think you're so right. It's so funny. What a hilarious physical choice Andrea Martin made, and I want to like put it in the show somehow.
And you know what, like, I don't know how she pulls it off. If other actors did that, it might sort of look just like strange
or
but
cheesy.
She does it in such a way that you know exactly what she's doing.
Absolutely. That's like how the comedy of Phyllis really works, is because Andrea Martin is so committed down to her toes that you're not questioning what she's doing. You're not like, oh, that's weird. You're like, oh, a real human person would do this. And because I'm watching it, it's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, now, you've got to do it in the show now. And listeners, you know, I don't normally advocate this, but just bootleg that one moment so I can see it, please.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we filmed last year's production. We may be filming it again for our private collection. You know what I mean? But, you know, maybe I shouldn't say this on a podcast, but I'm going to anyway, is if we film this year and we get a copy, I'll make sure to send it to you DMs.
Hey. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Well, you know what? I'm always torn on the thing of bootlegs, because I don't think it stops people going to the show. If anything, it makes me want to see the show more.
Yeah. I'm a big, strong proponent of bootlegging theater. And I think mostly I'm a strong proponent of it because even though I'm like a theater creator, I think that there are many people who, because of location, because of finances, because of timing, can't see the show. And then also there are people who did see the show who want to hold on to that memory. And like that record doesn't take away from the spontaneity and the joy of the live theater in the moment it's being created, but it does allow other people to experience that moment. And I think that's fabulous. And it's accessible. It's all about accessibility.
Exactly. That's why I would like that. What's that app? Broadway HD. I think they need to branch out and be recording more of these things, because like, I don't get to see a lot of shows. I'm in the UK. That some of them come here. Finally, yeah. I'm going to see the Book of Mormon after all these years. But you know, I've seen like, dare I admit this, I've seen a bootleg of Beetlejuice. And that just makes me want to see the show more. It's
Absolutely.
not like when you get a, a weird copy of a movie and then you don't buy the movie. It's more like when you see a live video of a band on YouTube and you go, oh, I need to go and see this.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and that's what am I trying to say? Yeah, I think you're so right. I think you're correct that like seeing something live recorded makes you want to see it live all the more.
Yeah, you want that moment, that experience for real. It's almost like a test. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like wanting a steak and going to McDonald's and getting a burger and being like, I still want a steak, but like at least I got this burger.
Yeah, I'm saying, yeah, I'm a vegetarian, but I know what you mean. But then in the scene here, Phyllis, she explains how this works, which, oh God, all of this is gold. They sever a nerve for comfort, much like they did for her forehead wrinkles. Which biting satire of vanity right here. Incredible.
Yeah.
And she also says how she's considering Botox injections, which I would imagine was nowhere near as well known when this was made as it is now, like people getting that just casually.
Yeah, right? I think both of those, I think the severing of the nerve is sort of absurd, but the Botox injections thing is just like giving us, the audience, a touchstone. And at the time that now my mom and I could go get Botox injections together and it would be like a normal, mother daughter date. You know what I mean?
But at
the time that this was released, the idea of Botox, I think, was so Hollywood and so foreign and unreachable to so many audience members. Yeah. I think it's brilliant commentary. And also watching it now, it really speaks to how far we've come, and maybe not in a good way, but like how far we've come in terms of making these like vain procedures accessible. And like that sort of speaks to the fact that like we haven't moved into a world where beauty is one thing we value, but it's not the only thing we value. We've now moved into a world where like beauty is still so highly prized that we're like trying to let everyone have access to beauty as opposed to letting everyone like themselves the way they are.
Oh, that's a great way of putting it. And also it made me think when you said, oh, it's like Hollywood there. Maybe that is, thinking of the time this was made, part of Phyllis's, the image she's going for. It's like, well, if I get Botox, I'll look important because that's what celebrities get.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's absolutely true. And truly, as like a drag performer, I had never considered fillers or Botox until I was like, drag is my career. And then I was like, oh no, now I have to like look the part. I can't just like have the skills and the talent. What little things in my body do I need to get rid of to make this work? You know?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily like vain in the sense that people would necessarily think. It's just that you're trying to create a certain image, and what's the easiest, best way I can do that and get
absolutely
it right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of getting all of the hair on my body lasered off from my nose down for work.
I mean, that sounds great to me. I could go for that.
Oh, it's been heaven to like wake up in the mornings and be like, oh, everything's so smooth and soft. It's great. But also I started doing that for work. And then I just was like, oh, I actually really enjoy this. What a privilege.
Yeah. I mean, I perform in a band where I dress as a woman and, I think I started shaving my legs and stuff for that. And then all of a sudden I'm like, yeah, I actually like this more.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a hassle. I've got to do it all the time. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The shaving, I think, is a miserable thing. And so that's why every week I sit through an hour of someone zapping my skin with a laser on a different part of my body. Cause I'm like, I don't want to shave anymore. I'm over it.
Hey, I'll tell you what, 1 hour compared to the time you would spend, I think that's time well spent.
Oh, I agreed. Agreed. Money and time very well spent. I recommend it to everybody.
I love the way Phyllis as well is describing the Botox. And she wants it because it paralyzes the entire face. Wonderful for negotiations.
Oh, yeah. No expression. Great poker face. No one can tell what I'm thinking.
She's got a point. You know, if you're in a business meeting because she wants to do that for Hedvig, then, you know, you want to keep a stony expression. Yes, I will consider the deal you have given us, even if it's like the greatest deal you've ever seen.
Yeah, And I think too, here's a new thought that I just had is this, so this idea of like freezing your face essentially into having resting bitch face so you can get your way, right?
Yeah.
It like also really plays into this like idea of like, why, like Hedvig is not like a wild success, but is clearly successful enough to support herself and her band with her music. You know what I mean? And like somebody who is that hurt and thus is that cruel to people around them, why are they successful? Well, partly because if you're a feminine person, that's what's expected of you to make your way through the world, you know? Mm. And so Hedvig came to like her level of like cruelty and bitchiness and passive aggressiveness naturally. And then Phyllis Stein is like, no, I'm going to create this within myself so that I can get shit done.
Oh, maybe she is a little bit inspired by Hedvig. I've never thought of that.
Oh, I think that's a really good idea. I mean, I think there's this idea that sometimes gets tossed around among performers and managers and blah, 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 is that some people who are not doing the art would like to do the art, but they don't have the skills or the drive to do the art. And so they're like doing a sideways career of like supporting the artist. And so I think
1000% happens. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I would not be surprised if Andrea Martin in the talks in the room and they were working through the script was like, okay, I want Hedvig to be successful partly because I want to do what I think Hedvig is doing, you know?
I think that a lot of the time that's what happens with managers. Cause again, you know, I like the punk scene. That's where I come from. Again, with the Sex Pistols, Malcolm McLaren, their manager, he eventually did do music after they broke up. It's okay. But it's like, well, he's not really a musician. He's just a sort of art school sloganeer, shall we say, you know. So he didn't really know what he was doing. And then the manager of The Clash, another big punk band, obviously, he ended up doing similar stuff. He did all the music for their last album, which they've disowned because they hate it so much.
Yeah.
Any way they can worm in, they always try it.
Yeah, I think that happens all the time. And unfortunately, like, we just don't live in a world where like those people can like be supported to like learn the skills they need. You know what I mean? So they're like, well, I guess I'll just do it this like half-assed way. And then maybe I'll absorb through osmosis and make art. No, you haven't put in the decades of time to make the art. So now you have the clout, but your art's not good enough to like match up to it.
Exactly. Exactly. Just go out and do it. And then you'll learn along the way. Do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, then they prep to head inside, like in the Finnish movie. And as we discussed last time on the show here, I think this woman at the, I don't want to say the door, whatever, the entrance, I think she's been briefed on them for sure, right?
Oh,
which was a debate we had, because she seems to know who these people are instantly. She doesn't say it, but she's wary from second one.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So I think somebody from Tommy's team has said, like, maybe not even shown her a picture, but like, some people might turn up to cause a commotion. Just be careful. And it's like, ah, it's clearly these two. It's not these girls in line.
Right. And now, timeline-wise, is this after the accident or before the accident?
Oh God, now you're testing me. God damn, I should know this. It's been a long time since I've recorded an episode. It's been a year.
Yeah. Because in my head, if it's after the accident, that person may not even have had to have been briefed on it necessarily for her to know, like, to her, like, recognize who Hedvig is. And, you know, because there is some, like, press happening.
Yeah, thinking about it, it's after the accident, isn't it? When we think about the timeline.
I think it is. I'm not telling your audience that I'm correct. I just like think right now that it is. And like that would be really easy to be like, you know, this person in the news, don't let them in. And this girl would be like, oh yeah, absolutely. I know who she is. That crazy girl.
Her face. Yeah. Because Hedvig does say, you know, I mean, she gets up the newspaper. It's like, some of you may have only just, you know, recently become aware of me. So I think quite a few people have maybe heard a name or seen a face on that. Was it a newspaper or a magazine? You've seen both.
TMZ style news, you know what I mean? Yeah. Even if it wasn't on like CNN, TMZ style news about a rock star who had an accident with like this illicit drag performing person of gender rock and roller is gonna like get some traction.
especially back when this was made. Like, that would have been the most shocking thing in the world to people still.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If my favorite rock and roller had, like, a secret lover and also hit a busload full of children, I would be like, oh, my gosh, what is happening?
And you know what the sad bit is? People wouldn't have focused on that. They would have focused on the trans element.
Oh, for sure. For sure. They've been like, oh, my goodness. I won't say it, but yes, absolutely, 100%.
Well, that, you see that in the movie, actually, because you get that brief bit of Tommy being interviewed as he's sort of getting dragged away, and he's like, I didn't know that she wasn't a woman.
Right.
It's like, that's all they're asking about. They're not asking about the dead children or whatever.
Yeah, well, yes, and like that really speaks to, and what I love about Hedwig is that the show and the script and the character is that so much of it is commentary on how fucked up the world is without it being like on the nose, because here we're getting commentary on the way, not just on the way that like the trans element is so often put on display, but also on the way that celebrity and money and status, particularly when you're like a wealthy, talented white man, can like help you get away with horrible things because you can just like throw the blame on somebody else.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Tommy faces absolutely no repercussions, really.
Right. Oh, man.
He's still a huge star. He's still touring. He's still got these millions of fans. There's people queuing up here, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that makes me so angry. I like have rehearsal tonight, and now I'm like talking about this, and I'm like, oh, I'm so mad now about Tommy. I'm so mad.
You can use it. You can utilize it. Feel the anger.
Fuel it, yeah.
And then at the end of this bit, we get the classic Phyllis line of, I could have your job. It's so bitchy. I love it.
Right. And also, I think that's so funny. I could have your job. Phyllis, you wouldn't want her job. You're an agent. She's working a line of fans who want pictures. Like,
And I think this woman sees through her in the way we've been talking about, because she's like, I don't think you could. So she knows, oh, you're a fake. Screw you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's really interesting for us to see, because I think a lot of Hedwig and her band and Phyllis, they all sort of band together, partially because there's just like shared experience of the world treating you like a fake. You know?
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's the sort of end of this scene. Have you got anything to say about this scene before I ask a few other questions?
I don't. I think we covered a lot. And I think I just could say again, Andrea Martin is a hilarious comedic genius. John Cameron Mitchell looks amazing and is so heartbreaking in this. It's just like if you all audience can go and see this, go watch this scene. It's great. I think it's great to add to the lore of Hedwig.
Yeah, I wish I could provide it to you listeners, but that's illegal. Go and buy, in fact, the Criterion edition, which is the one we covered in the show, if you remember. It has slightly different chapters. Go and buy it. It's amazing, and it's worth every penny. The packaging is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a few compulsory questions that I don't think I necessarily hit on, because I didn't get to ask you, when did you first see Hedwig? It can be the show or the movie. I don't know which came first for you. For me, it was the movie.
Yeah, well, I have never had the privilege of seeing Hedwig performed live. I've only had the privilege of doing it live. But I saw the film, I think I must have been a freshman in high school. So I was, 12? That was a decade ago. It would have been 20, like 18 years ago.
Oh, whoa, okay. Yeah, I think that's even longer ago than me. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And did you like it immediately? Because I instantly, as the listeners are probably sick of me saying, I instantly fell in love with it to the point where I watched it every day for a month.
Yeah. Oh, immediately was enamored with it. I mean, that's my response was, oh, I saw Hedwig. Let me go seek out Short Bus. Was like my initial, I went and was like talking to my friends about it, and they were like, here's my DVD of Short Bus. And I was like, oh great, I want to watch this, because I just decided like whoever John Cameron Mitchell, the storyteller, whatever they're putting out into the world, I want to consume, because there's something here that really speaks to me, you know?
I can totally see that. In fact, I've been trying I feel like I've got to do a bonus episode about Shortbus, but I'm not sure how exactly you approach that as a podcast. It's a unique experience, that movie.
Yeah, strange and beautiful and heartbreaking and funny all at once.
Yeah, that's good. That would be a... So I'm not rushing into that. I want to do it justice if I do it.
Yeah.
So we'll figure that out, people. But have you seen the movie John directed, How to Talk to Girls at Parties?
No, I've not even had the privilege of hearing about that. So now I'm going to write that down in my notes.
Up until I covered it on the Patreon episodes for this show, I hadn't heard of it either. So I only heard of it about 2 years ago.
Yeah,
because someone I work with who hasn't even seen Hedwig told me about it, and John just directs it. But it's set in England, and it's about punk music, and aliens come to Earth, and one of the punks falls in love with this alien girl, and it's about that, and it's directed by John, and I think you can feel his touch on it definitely. It's very strange. There's very arty elements to it, lots of good humor and things like that. I'd recommend it to people. It didn't get great reviews, but then who gives a damn about reviews?
Yeah, not everything's for everybody. It sounds like right in my alley, though. Punk music, John Cameron Mitchell, aliens, I'm in.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it to the point I've watched it a good few times now.
Good.
I think everybody should give it a go. But well, speaking of watching things, do you like musicals in general, or is it not a genre you really have much time for? Because I find Hedwig can often be an outlier for some people in this regard, or the gateway. I think it's probably... I saw Rocky Horror, and then I think the next musical I saw was this. I never really watched musicals in between. It wasn't my thing.
Interesting. Yeah, musicals, I have a really wide appreciation for music of all genres, and musical theater has been something that's sort of been in my wheelhouse for a really long time. It was actually when I approached Hedwig as a role, I was challenged, or I was nervous, because I was like, oh, can I pull off this music authentically? Mm. Because I have a degree in opera, is where my background in performing is, and I have done a lot of musical theater, and I really, really like rock and roll and punk rock and this sort of like more raw, more gritty musical world. But I wasn't sure that I would be able to step into it appropriately, because I was coming at it from the direction of like, I'm a musical theater fan.
That's the thing, it's totally different, isn't it? Like both great, but not the same at all.
Absolutely. And like, and truly, like, I talk about like what Hedwig has taught me as like a person, but like Hedwig, the show and the music has also taught me a lot about performing and how to sort of like lean into this like raw, more emotional, more like guttural way of making music. And also, I think if someone were to see me perform the role, I think there's a lot of, what do you call it? There's a lot of variety going on. I'm using a lot of different like colors in my voice, and like, I'm all over my range, because part of the joy of Hedwig as a musical is that because it's like a rock and roll musical, you don't have to interpret it strictly to what's on the page. You can really give it a little improv and a little zhuzh, and that's great.
Always the best. When obviously you don't want to improv too much, but when you can bring touches of yourself in or your experiences, that's when you really take on the role, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's fabulous. It's such a good time.
Well, this was the gateway. Despite having seen Rocky Horror first, I think this is then what made me check out other musicals. Like,
I love that.
It wasn't, it was only like a little bit later. I was going to say later in life, like I'm 70, but a bit later that I sort of really started watching stuff. Like I checked out Rent because of this. I'd never seen it. I didn't even know what it was about.
Yeah,
but they keep going on about Rent in Hedwig. So one day I was on my own all weekend, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to drink a bottle of wine, and I'm going to put Rent on. It's going to be a lovely evening. What fun! Not realizing it is a great musical, but it's not exactly fun.
Not a happy musical, no.
I was in pieces, crying on the sofa with the cat.
Yeah, well, and it's funny actually. Rent was probably my first musical, because I think Rent came out when I was in middle school, and it like got its release, like theatrical release, musical, like not Broadway release, but it's theatrical release in movie theaters when I was in middle school. And it's funny that I ended up doing opera later in life because my first musical was Rent. And then the first opera I ever saw was La Bohème, which is what Rent is based on. And so there's like this full circle cycle that I went through because of that musical. It's great.
Oh, that's absolutely incredible. I love that.
Yeah.
And listeners, you know, I'm going to be a shill here. If you want to hear me talk about Rent, it's on the Patreon. Subscribe.
Yes, please subscribe. Support podcasters, everybody.
Support. It's only $2 and you get all my Rent stuff. It's great. And you get all this. I've got a million podcasts. You get all the bonus stuff. $2. Great. Go do it.
Very affordable. So
not
reasonable.
To turn this into an advertisement, but you know. But Rent's an amazing one. And from there, I've checked out a whole bunch of other ones. You know, it sort of expanded my world in that sense. And that's what's great for Hedvig. You know, it can be an in lots of different ways. Like maybe a musical fan watches it and then gets into like rock and roll.
Right, right.
And the vice versa has happened with me, you know.
Yeah. And you could even come to Hedvig not as a music fan, but because you want to consume content about gender and sexuality. And then you're like, actually, wow, this music is so great.
Exactly. And weirdly, despite the, you know, certain terms not being used at the time, if anything, Hedvig's journey is just as, if not more, relevant to the world today, I think.
Oh.
Because, you know, Hedvig, I think John has said, actually, Hedvig, these days, you would say, is non-binary by the end of the movie.
Right. Yeah, we had a really interesting discussion about that when we started approaching the role, because my director was like, okay, like, how do we look at this script through a lens that feels modern? Because I think it would be really easy to like look at the script and be like, oh, it's like set in the 90s. This is the 90s period piece. Let's go. But we wanted to like keep it fresh and keep it authentic. And like, also, I'm a person, consider myself trans feminine and like land on different places of the spectrum constantly. And so we've also brought some of that into the role as well. And I think it's really fun. And what's great about Hedvig is that because John Cameron Mitchell and Stephen Trask were so committed to not telling a quote unquote trans story or a quote unquote gay story, but they were telling this unique, specific story about this complicated human who happens to have a gender thing and who happens to have a sexuality thing, but it's not like the only thing about them that's important. I think it will stand the test of time, truly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that was a really clever move. And it makes it appeal, as I said earlier, to a really broad audience.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, oh, that's the trans movie, which people would say about it if that was the focus. It's more philosophical and deep, and it makes everyone think and look inward and things and go on your own journey with Hedvig.
Right. Yeah.
Which you should all be doing that anyway. I think everybody should, not necessarily just, you don't just sit down and have a think, but, you know, explore things.
Yeah, I think that's one of the truly the saddest effect of cultural status quo, where like we're told like you need to be this thing to do this thing, and that's how you do it, is that the people who align with the status quo are never encouraged to or forced to, like those of us who are outside the status quo are forced to, they're never encouraged to question themselves and do what they're doing intentionally. And like someone like Hedvig has had to live her life really intentionally because she was so different and stood out from the status quo and like has to, okay, I'm presenting myself this way and I'm doing it on purpose. I'm not doing it on accident. Okay, I'm making music this way and I'm doing it on purpose. I'm not doing it on accident. I think a lot of like cis, straight, white, middle-class people in the world are just living their lives on accident.
Nothing's ever considered or thought about. It's just, well, this is just how it is.
Exactly. And like, I think that's like as like a queer kid with like a father who is like very comfortable living in the status quo, I think he's constantly shocked by me because I just like make him question anything.
Yes.
And like, he's like never had to do that. Yeah.
I have an ex-Navy dad. So, you know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Same. My dad was also in the Navy. That's so funny.
Yeah, which, you know, it's not, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it restricts certain ways of thinking, shall we say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think truly, if you are somebody who can like fit within the status quo and you never have to think about yourself, you're also missing a lot of things that could bring you joy, or you're missing a lot of things in your life that currently bring you sadness that you're just like not thoughtful or aware of. And like that, I think is a shame. I think it's a shame.
Oh, what a great lesson to leave people with. That's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
We will, just before I actually wrap up, I normally ask people on the show if they want to recommend like songs and stuff, but I wasn't going to do it for the bonus episodes. But now I'm weighing, if you've got a song that you particularly like and think might apply to Hedvig in some way, you can recommend one if you want, but you don't have to.
Oh my, a song that I like. Okay, great. We're gonna go genre skipping here. There's a song from the opera Rusalka by Dvorak, which the English translation, if you look it up, is called The Song to the Moon. And Rusalka is the Czechoslovakian version of The Little Mermaid. And yes, and The Song to the Moon, it's a great opera. It's really interesting because like the whole second act, the lead singer is like not singing because she's silent. She's lost her voice to like walk on land. It's great. It's really interesting. But The Song to the Moon is her like 5-minute long aria where she is saying like, I yearn, I wish to experience something different than where I'm at. And I think that there's so much yearning in Hedwig's story, and there's so much yearning in the music she creates. You can hear it in Wicked Little Town. You can hear it at the end of Origin of Love. You can hear it in Midnight Radio, just like this like great yearning to be somewhere better. And I think The Song to the Moon by Dvorak really, really deeply expresses that in a way that's really palatable or really palpable to me. And also, it is the song that I listen to before I go on stage every night because it is my like, oh, I'm nervous, let me calm down song.
Oh, that's perfect. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Listeners, I was weighing up whether I should put them on the playlist. We have a running playlist, you see, of every guest recommends songs. And you know what? That's so good. Who cares? I'm reviving the playlist. It's going on.
I love it. I'm so thrilled and honored. Thank you.
Immediately after the songs chosen by John Cameron Mitchell, it's your song.
Oh, wow. I really am deeply honored. Thank you so much.
That's amazing. That's absolutely fantastic. And yeah, is there anything else you'd like to say about Hedvig in general before we head off?
No, I think through this really specific lens, we got to cover quite a lot today. So thank you very much.
No problem. So that's why I like focusing, because, you know, in the main show, we go through each chapter of the Blu-ray. And I really like that focus because it weirdly lets you sort of spiral out from there into lots of other topics and conversations and things. And you cover a lot of ground, even though you think, oh, I'm only looking at these 2 minutes or whatever.
Absolutely.
But yes, we will head off now down the road. Gilda, would you like to tell people where you can be found online or promote anything you like that you're either working on or just want to get people interested in?
Absolutely. If you are in the Kentucky, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia area, I am doing Hedvig and the Angry Inch live in July. Hold on, let me open my calendar. July, it's the 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th. So next weekend, I don't know if this will be up by that moment.
I'm going to try and rush it up over the weekend.
Oh, delicious. That's so lovely. And then I'll also be performing the role of Mary Sunshine in the musical Chicago in Lexington, Kentucky, August 4th through the 7th. It's like literally back to back, these two wildly different roles. And if you want to follow any of my other future workings, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Venmo, Grubhub, Grindr, Ashley Madison, at Gilda Wabbit, GILDAWABBIT.
Make sure to do that, everybody. And as I did mention, I've got to bring it up because it's come up. This show's come up a few times here on the podcast. Check out Camp Wanakiki as well.
Oh, please do. And they're now launching season 4, which I have some friends on. So definitely check out Camp Wanaki. It's a great time.
I am excited. But yes, check out all of Gilda's stuff there. As usual, come and talk to us on Facebook at Hedvig's Wicked Little Town, Twitter at Hedvig Pod, Instagram, Hedvig Pod again. And why not? Let me think. What should I plug this time? Go to the website. I never plug the website because it's mostly just to host the episodes. But have a look anyway. It's hedvig.lgbt. I think I also own hedvig.gay. I think.
I love that. Good for you.
You can give that a go, people. Any random dot I try and purchase. So all of that. And do stay tuned because there's going to be more bonus episodes. I know I've been promising you them these for about a year now, but they're finally coming. They're coming, people.
We're back, baby.
Yeah, we'll be back with the second deleted scene, and there's a bit of extended stuff, but the rest of it's mostly brand new, so it's gonna be a very long one, that one, I think. So see you then, headheads.